Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Set your mind on the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of the Father. You see, as the people of God, even though we live here on the earth, our heart, our affection, our devotions, our commitment is not to be to earthly things, but our commitment is to be to heaven and to the Lord of heaven and to the agenda of heaven.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the book of Philippians. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Philippians chapter 3, verses 17 through 21, in a message titled, Citizens of Heaven. Now here's Pastor Brian.
Brethren, or brothers and sisters, join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which we also eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body, that it may be conformed to his glorious body, according to the working by which he is able even to subdue all things to himself. Therefore, my beloved and longed for brethren, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, beloved. So we are going through Philippians, as I mentioned, and our general theme for Philippians is the fellowship of the gospel. And we took that as our theme because Paul is in a partnership with the Philippians to further the gospel. You see, Paul was the founder of this church in Philippi. Philippi was a city in what we know today as Greece. And Paul had come there and preached the gospel, and people had received Christ, and a church was established. And they were so thankful for the mission and the ministry of Paul. They were so thankful that the gospel had come to them and transformed their lives that they wanted to see this happen with other people in other cities throughout the world. And so they partnered with the Apostle Paul. They supported him financially. They sent him out, if you will, to continue the gospel ministry. And so they were in fellowship, the fellowship of the gospel. Now, the gospel, many of you know this, but for those of you that might not know it, the word gospel means the good news. And so this is the news that came to the Philippians. This was the news that Paul would spread throughout the world. This is the news that comes down to us today. The good news is that God has made a way for us to be reconciled to him, to be brought back into a relationship with him. You see, in the beginning, when God created humanity, he created us people, he created us to know him and to live in communion with him. But sin entered into the picture and broke the fellowship with God, but God made a way to mend that. And he did that by sending his son, Jesus Christ, into the world, who took the punishment for our sin upon himself, paid a debt that we couldn't pay, and provided a way for us to come back into this relationship with God. So as we receive Christ, then we are reconciled to God. We're brought into that relationship with him. We're actually made the citizens of heaven. But what we want to consider today is specifically what Paul says about our citizenship being in heaven. But just to get ourselves in the setting here, in the previous verses, Paul has been talking about the fact that he hasn't yet been perfected. He hasn't fully attained what Christ had apprehended him for. And we understood from a previous study that this resurrection out from the dead, Paul's talking about this life that has this the quality of the Spirit. And it's a life where we are growing more and more into the likeness of Christ. And Paul says that he himself had not already attained to that, but regardless of where he was at, he was going to keep pressing toward that. He's pressing toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. And so that's the background. And now Paul says in verse 17, he says, "Brothers and sisters, join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern." So Paul says, follow me in this. Wherever you're at in your walk or relationship with the Lord, follow me in my example of forgetting the things that are behind and pressing toward the things that are ahead. So Paul, as he does in other places, he sets himself forth as an example to be followed. Now, interestingly, some people have thought that that was maybe a too bold of a thing. And some have even suggested, well, Paul didn't really say, follow me. He was saying, well, imitate me as much as I try to imitate Christ. And for some people, it just seems like a little too much for a person to say, follow my example. But we know that Paul is saying, follow my example, because he said it in other places. And you see, the reality is, those who have walked with Jesus, those who have followed him for some time, ought to be able to say to others, especially to those who are younger and immature and maybe just getting started in their faith, ought to be able to say to others, hey, follow my example. Follow my example in seeking the Lord. So as a matter of fact, Paul would write to Timothy, who was his young understudy, if you will. And Paul would say to Timothy, Timothy, be an example to the believers. And so being an example is something that we who are strong in the faith were to be conscious of, that other people are watching, and we want to be a good example. And so Paul calls them to follow his example, to follow the pattern that could be seen in his life and the life of others. But then he says this, he says, "For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ." So if we go back to the first part of the third chapter, there Paul brings up the fact that there were these false teachers that would come in and they would try to lead people astray. So he's coming back around to referring to them once again here. But he uses very strong language. He refers to them as the enemies of the cross of Christ. And notice he's really making a contrast between himself and those other faithful ministers and these that he's speaking about now, who he refers to as the enemies of the cross of Christ. And notice what he says about these. He says that their end is destruction. And then he says, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. So this is hard to think about, but it is true that as it was back in Paul's time and as it still is today, unfortunately, there are people who are in the church. There are people who are perhaps in positions of power in certain churches or denominations. There are people stationed in seminaries and so forth who, in reality, although they are claiming in a sense to be the representatives of Christ, are actually the enemies of the cross. And those are heavy things to think about, but they are a reality. And Paul says three things mark them. Number one, their God is their belly. That sounds like a strange thing. What does that mean? Your God is your belly. And well, the picture is a person whose life is consumed by their lower appetites, their lust and their cravings. This is what these people are really living for. Their God is not the true God who calls us to deny ourselves, pick up the cross and follow Jesus, but their God is one who encourages them to indulge themselves. So their God is their belly. And then he says, their glory is in their shame. What does that mean? Well, what he's really saying is that their glory or their boasting is in the very things that they ought to be ashamed of. So the things that are actually shameful that they're doing that are inconsistent with a profession of Christ, they're proud of that. And Paul says this is a way that you can identify them. They're proud of the things that they should be ashamed of. They're boasting in their sin. And then the third thing he says is that they set their mind on earthly things. And that's the key. They set their mind on earthly things. Paul, in writing to the Colossians, he says, set your mind on the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of the Father. You see, as the people of God, even though we live here on the earth, our heart, our affection, our devotions, our commitment is not to be to earthly things, but our commitment is to be to heaven and to the Lord of heaven and to the agenda of heaven. And so these that he labels as the enemies of the cross are those whose agenda is an earthbound agenda. And just as that was the case in Paul's day, we still have that same situation today. As I said, there are people who are in positions of power whose agenda is really one that is more consistent with the agenda of a Christ-rejecting world than with the agenda that we have given to us in the gospel. And so again, Paul says, follow my example. And those with me, we've set a pattern for you as opposed to those who are the enemies of the cross of Christ. And then he goes on and he says, for our citizenship is in heaven. And so we want to talk about that for a moment. Our citizenship is in heaven. Now, this would be something that the Philippians would really identify with. This would resonate powerfully with the Philippians. Remember, Philippi was a Roman colony. And you see, a colony would basically be Rome in a different location. So, you know, there have been times in history where nations have built empires, and through their empires, they've created colonies. And what they've sought to do is just take the motherland, so to speak, and transport it to a different location. So even though geographically it's distanced, culturally, it's identical. And, you know, even some people today have grown up in countries that were formerly colonies. Maybe now they're part of a commonwealth or something. And you find when you go into these cultures, you find that there are all these interesting and sometimes idiosyncratic similarities. And, you know, they're very much remind you. I have a friend who grew up in Rhodesia. And I remember when we first met years ago in South Africa. And I remember, although his accent was South African and not English, so much of his mannerisms and his outlook and all of that, they just reminded me so much of people that I knew back in England. And then he told me that later on, he went for the very first time in his life, he went to visit England. And he was saying how when he got to England, he was so shocked how similar England was to Rhodesia, where he had grown up. And of course, the funny thing was, it was not that England was similar to Rhodesia. It was Rhodesia was similar to England because they had colonized it. And so for the Philippians, although they lived in Greece, you wouldn't know it. You would think you actually lived in Rome because of that colonization. So when Paul says to the Philippians, our citizenship is in heaven, that very term, citizenship, would strike a chord with them. They would understand that. And what they would understand by that is, even though we are living in a different location, this is not really our home. And this is not really where our hearts are. So in contrast to those who set their mind on earthly things, true believers focus on, glory in, and live out their heavenly citizenship here on earth. You see, the Bible teaches that for Christians, life is a pilgrimage. So we are pilgrims and strangers here on the earth. That's something that the Apostle Peter said. Believers are sojourners. A sojourner is a temporary resident. A sojourner is a person who is passing through a place, but they're on their way somewhere else. Their true home is not in that location, and it's their true home that they would long to ultimately be at. And so their affections, even though they might be in one place, their affections lie in another place. And perhaps you can identify with this fully because maybe you live in a particular place, but it's not really your home. It's not your native land. And even though you've perhaps even decided to settle there, yet you think back with fondness on the homeland and you bear, even with some pride, not in a bad way, but in a good way, you know, the fact that you are, your citizenship is in another place. And so we understand that from human experience. And Paul is saying that this is the reality for us as believers. Earth is not our home. Earth is a temporary place that we are passing through on our way to our true home, which is the Lord's presence, which is heaven. The lives of the patriarchs, they really exemplified this. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they beautifully illustrate the idea of being temporary residents here on earth. And in the letter to the Hebrews in the 11th chapter, we have just this great paragraph that speaks of this very thing. Let me read to you from Hebrews 11, 8 through 16. It begins by saying, by faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, Abraham is a citizen of Chaldea in modern day Iraq. And yet God is going to change his citizenship. He is going to call him away from there, and he's going to call him to a place that he will inherit. And so Abraham goes out, it says, not knowing where he was going. And then it says, by faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob. And then it says this, for he waited for the city that has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And they, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So that was their confession. They were strangers and pilgrims. They were waiting for a city that has foundation, it says here, whose builder and maker is God. So in confessing that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth, those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. So Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it says that they dwelt in tents. And it's interesting that their dwelling in tents was not out of necessity because there were no cities to live in. As I mentioned, Abraham came from a place called Ur in Chaldea, which was an amazing city at the time. It was a very sophisticated city. Archaeologists have discovered that there was one of the massive libraries from the ancient world was there in that city. So it wasn't that there were not cities, and so they had no other option but to live in tents. But no, they chose to live in tents. They were Bedouins, basically. And they chose this lifestyle as a statement. And what were they saying? They were saying that this place is not our home. that earth is not our country of citizenship. It's our temporary place of residence. But we're looking for a city, as it says here, that has foundations. And the idea is it has firm and unmovable foundations whose builder and maker is God. So when Paul says to the Philippians, our citizenship is in heaven, this is what he's talking about. That for us as believers, the earth is not our permanent residence. It's not the place of our citizenship. It is the place that we are temporarily passing through. But because we're temporarily passing through, we don't want to be like the enemies of the cross who set their mind on earthly things. You see, that's the contrast. The patriarchs set their mind on the city that has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. The enemies of the cross set their mind on earthly things. In other words, the earth and the things of the earth, the things of this world, those were the priority. But the saints of old and the Philippians and us today know our citizenship is in heaven. Now, with being citizens, citizenship brings with it three things. It brings privileges, it brings perks, and it brings responsibility. Now, in the context that Paul is writing, of course, Roman citizenship was a highly coveted thing in Paul's day. And most of the people in the empire itself were not citizens. They were subjects of the empire. Very few people were citizens, but the citizens of Rome had tremendous privileges that the other people did not have. Now, Paul, ironically, Paul is actually a Roman citizen, even though he's a Jew, but he was a Jew who was born in the city of Tarsus, one of the great cities of the Roman Empire, and from birth, he had been a Roman citizen. And there's a story in the book of Acts where Paul is arrested for preaching. He's arrested by the Roman garrison, and they're about to lay the whip on him so they can get a confession out of him of why his speech caused such an uproar in Jerusalem. And just before they began to beat him, Paul asked this question. He said, is it lawful to beat a Roman citizen who hasn't gone through a trial? And all of a sudden, the man with the whip stopped and paused and went over to the captain of the guard and said, hey, we need to be careful. This guy's a Roman citizen. And so the captain of the guard, he goes to Paul privately and he says, are you really a citizen? And Paul says, yes, I really am a Roman citizen. So you see, he had certain privileges as a Roman citizen. He couldn't just be taken and manhandled. He couldn't be taken and thrown into a jail cell. He couldn't be taken and beaten. He had the privilege of having the right to a trial.
And now let's join Pastor Brian in the studio as he shares about this month's resource on Back to Basics.
An important aspect of the Christian life is understanding that we are in a spiritual battle. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, the Apostle Paul told us in Ephesians chapter 6, but we are in a war against these principalities and powers, against these spiritual beings. And so I've written a book that was at one time entitled Spiritual Warfare, but in the updated version, I changed the title to The Powers of Darkness and the People of God. And I think this is such an important book. So many of us go about experiencing what is really the attack of the devil, but we don't even realize that that's what's going on. So this book will inform you not only of how to detect when the enemy's at work, but also of how to combat the various schemes of the enemy to mess with us and to undermine our faith and to just basically make our lives miserable. So I want to encourage you to pick up a copy of The Powers of Darkness and the People of God.
Again, this month's resource is a book titled The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Brian Broderson. You can order the book The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of it, and then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book, The Powers of Darkness and the People of God by Brian Broderson. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Philippians. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.